Good morning and welcome to Beyond the Gates, how Erdc makes the difference. We are on season 2, episode 14 this morning, and I'm with Jordan Klein. He's a research computer engineer with the Information Technology Laboratory, otherwise known as ITL, and we're going to be talking about computing on the edge. Good morning, Jordan.
Hey, good morning. How's it going?
It's going great. So glad to have you here this morning. And we are going to talk about some fun computing information.
Absolutely.
So, first off, what is your role at Erdc?
Okay, so like you said, I'm a research computer engineer. I work in the sensor integration branch out of the Information Technology Lab. And so we focus on building sensing systems to go out essentially into the environment, you know, collect measurements, collect data, process that data, and turn it into information across a wide range of things, everything from civil works projects to military stuff. So anything with some electronics, computer kind of component is kind of what we do. So it's really been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of cool work supporting a lot of folks at Erdc and across DoD.
Awesome. So here's always an interesting part. So people can get to know the people that we're speaking to on the radio show is tell me about yourself and your background and what steps did you take to get to where you are today?
Yeah, absolutely. No, so I studied at Mississippi State University. I did computer engineering there, and I actually was part of the National Science Foundation NSF Scholarship for Service to do computer security, cybersecurity, because I thought that's what I wanted to do, you know, when I was young. And so it was a lot of fun work, a lot of fun learning experiences there through that program. But part of that program was to actually go and do complete federal service after you graduated. And so what I did is, kind of found Erdc through that program and kind of ended up here, you know, and not necessarily doing cybersecurity anymore, which is okay. But yeah, so that's kind of how I ended up at Erdc. There's a lot of folks from that program, from Mississippi State specifically, that ended up here. I think there's two or three of us just within our branch.
So. Okay. A lot of bulldogs at Erdc, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So what exactly is edge computing and how is Erdc involved with it?
Okay, so edge computing is essentially taking your computing resources, you know, whether those be the high-performance computing resources or some more low-power devices, but sticking them sort of out into the environment, sort of at the point of measurement or where the end user is going to be. So say you're going out and you're measuring some kind of maybe water quality or, you know, acoustic signatures in a specific area. So you can go out and you can collect the sensor data there and you can transmit that sensor data back. But what ends up happening is that becomes very expensive to do just because of the cost of transmitting anything over like cellular networks or things like that. And so what you want to do is you want to take the actual processing power, the actual computer node, to go to that point of measurement and collect that data. So that way you can process it all in place and then send back information based on that data. So essentially what you're trying to do is just cut back on network traffic and then also, you know, get answers very, very quickly when you do it that way. So you don't have to send samples back to lab or what have you. So you can just get answers right there and then. But yeah, like I said, anything we do at Erdc, we have things all the way from, we call it HPC on the edge, where we have, you know, a petaflop worth of GPU computing that we can stick out there in a climate control box, you know, so we can run in desert environments. So on and so forth. And then we have everything down to the subwatt processing as well. So the whole gamut of, you know, hey, can we get a lot of compute power out there to the edge, or can we get just small, almost disposable size computers and processing like chemical sensing data? We do a lot of that on very, very low power devices. We want to keep those in situ for a long time and process as much as we can for as long as we can. And then on the high performance side, obviously a little bit more power hungry, but still same kind of concept, is where that's where all the sensor data is, that's where all the information is, that's where your end user is. So you want to be able to get the computational resources to them instead of sending it all the way back here to Erdc or wherever.
So on the edge. Erdc is on the edge, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, the bleeding edge.
Exactly. I'm Annette Kirkland. Beyond the Gates continues in a moment. You're listening to News Talk 107.7.
If you or a family member require electricity for a medical device, please be aware Yazoo Valley Electric cannot guarantee uninterruptible service. Please make preparations for possible power outages due to weather conditions. Make preparations to relocate if necessary. This message is brought to you by Yazoo Valley Electric. If you experience an outage, please report it by calling 1-800-273-8255. 866-484-4277. Visit us online at YazooValley.com. Find us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter.
At George Carr Buick GMC, we are celebrating 34 years of serving the Vicksburg community, proudly selling cars, trucks, and SUVs as a locally owned and operated business. We would like to thank all our customers for their loyalty and making us their number one choice when it comes to their automotive service and body shop needs. So come by and see us at 2950 South Frontage Road or check us out online at georgecarr.com. And like my father always said,
George Carr, where you can expect a great deal.
Drive away a winner when you buy from George Carr.
Welcome back to Beyond the Gates. You're listening to News Talk 107.7. Well, if you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with Jordan Klon. He is a research computer engineer with the Information Technology Laboratory, and we're computing on the edge. So what type of background is required to lay out the edge computing technology?
Yes, that's a good question. So we're, you know, we have a facility where we do all this now at ERDC, but it takes folks from all across the organization, working with folks in all seven labs. But essentially, you know, obviously your computer engineers, your computer scientists, electrical engineers, folks like that you traditionally think would be associated with computing, but it also takes a whole host of, you know, mechanical engineers, civil folks. To kind of put these things together, because, you know, you can't just obviously take your, you know, home desktop and stick it out in the desert somewhere, right? There's got to be a lot of hardening, a lot of very conscientious design choices and how you put that out there, you know, all the trade-offs that you have to make based on, you know, the power and the heat and, you know, if you're operating in the cold environments, there's a lot of things to consider there. So it takes a whole ton of people to put these kinds of things together, you know, and then at the end of the day, right, it's just, you know, computers is the computer. So what are you attaching to it? Whether it's, you know, acoustic sensors, whether it's, you know, some of the work we're doing with the environmental lab, for example, and the chemical sensing, those kinds of sensing technologies. So it takes the chemists, it takes the acousticians, it takes folks from every kind of background to come together to build these kinds of systems.
I bet people never even realize that. I mean, they just, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
So how is ERDC integrating edge computing into important projects?
Yeah, so I mean, so like I said, you know, really where we want to be is collecting that data as quickly as possible and processing and giving as much information as quickly as possible. So, so one of the first projects I was involved with here at ERDC was actually doing noise monitoring for the military, trying to figure out what things looked like as far as their noise environment goes on military installations, because it's a huge problem for the Army when we're blowing stuff up and we're shooting things. You know, people call in and they complain, you know, hey, it's too loud, you know. Things like that.
The boom goes loud.
Yes, the boom goes loud, and you know it's a big problem, and it's a little bit disruptive for the surrounding community. So we want to be able to understand, hey, what's going on at any given time. But in order to do that, we were collecting just an absolute ton of information, like something like, you know, 2 gigabytes or so, like per minute or something like that, which is just a ton of data, and obviously sending all that back. Somewhere to be processed and to get answers was very, very slow. So what we developed was an acoustic monitor with all the compute resources inside of it, had all the microphones, had our specific software stack that was developed. We put that out there, and so that way we're able to kind of monitor that data live and just feedback, you know, very, very specific information based on the acoustics there. So
okay,
that's just one example, and we have everything from, I mentioned the chemical sensing work that we're doing, which is more water quality kind of sampling, so kind of trying to find contaminants inside of the water supply, you know, and that's the cutback on the time, you know, of like taking a water sample, sending it back to the lab, you know, waiting, you know, physically shipping a water sample back to the lab. So if we can do that at the point, so measure it in situ, collect data, process that data, and send back an answer of, hey, is this contaminant present or not? Mm-hmm. So sort of things like that. So you know, and it can be anything else, really, you know, whether it be, you know, robotics as well. We're doing kind of work there. So we're going out and we call it mobile edge computing, right? Because it looks like a robot, but it's essentially just a computational stack that's on a platform with wheels, you know. Mm-hmm. And so we send that out and we do site characterizations. We do infrastructure inspection. And so we can take these platforms, put a big computer on there, a lot of sensors. So we're talking about, you know, like 5-6 cameras, LIDAR, IMUs, all kinds of things to kind of figure out where we are in the environment and then collect really, really accurate maps. And so we can process all of that on board that robot, on board that platform, sort of as we're driving around, we can build those maps live. And that's really, really important for, you know, going out into sort of unknown environments on the military side and kind of figuring out, hey, where am I, you know, because you can have satellite data, you can have stuff like that, but that's typically dated. So you want to know exactly where you are in real time and build those maps. And so that's a couple other things we're doing. And like I said, there's a lot of applications there for the military and then the civil side as well. When you go into infrastructure, something we have, I think what you all talked about on this program, the DamBot.
I was going to say very similar to the DamBot.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's, you know, going into those long conduits where, you know, you don't have your GPS, you don't have really, you know, great communications. So even sending data back is a big challenge when you go in there. So being able to go in there, process all those cameras, process all that LiDAR, collect all that information, and then build the map of that infrastructure live is super important.
Okay. ERDC is all about data. All about data.
The big data. There's a lot of data out there, you know. So
it's so much data. I mean, going out to collect data and keeping up with all the data. So what are some lessons learned and or challenges of the program?
Yeah, so a couple of the challenges we're running into, you know, is we've, you know, as technology is kind of emerging technology, chips have shrunk and they've gotten smaller and we can do more processing per watt, so on and so forth. You know, we're kind of looking at, we've run up against the wall, so we can only put so many more transistors on a wafer, so we have to, you know, kind of come up with other ways to make things faster, make things better. And so some of the things we're looking at now is to take actual, like AI algorithms, things like that, and put them on very, very dedicated, microprocessors. And so what that looks like is, instead of putting out just like a generalized computer system, I'm putting out a sensor node that does one thing and one thing only, but does it very, very well, very low power. And so that's one of the things we're looking at lately, just kind of miniaturizing some machine learning platforms like that. But then, like I said, the other big part is the environment, right, that you're going into. So I mentioned, you know, putting it in deserts where you have, the biggest problem is your heat. You know, you've got dust. So if you want to do any kind of air cooling, you have a lot of problems there.
Just like your cell phone doesn't like when it gets really hot.
Oh, yeah. No, and these, you know, these machines can get very, very hot. So you're talking about, you know, on the HPC side, we have a platform that runs it. I want to say it produces like 3,500 watts of heat continuously. And so that actually we have a huge air conditioning system that's actually attached to it to pump cold air through there continuously just to keep that thing running. And we can run it up to, I think, about 130 degrees Fahrenheit. So
wow.
So yeah, it's a big system, and it, like I said, it's designed to pull in a ton of information. There's about a petaflop worth of GPU processing on that machine. But then we have other just bad, not bad, but tough environments, right? Mm-hmm. So in civil works, a lot of it is going to be submerged, right, with our waterways. A lot of the infrastructure is underwater or partially underwater. So how do you put sensor nodes? How do you put compute nodes out there in those kinds of environments? So it's all about, how do we package this stuff well enough, and how do we keep it low power enough that we can run it for a long time, right? Because if you collect a ton of data very, very quickly and process it, it's obviously very expensive in terms of power, and you want to be able to leave that out there as long as you can, especially if you're in a remote location where you don't have what we call shore power, right? You're not plugging into the outlet.
Now, I was just going to say, how long can they last without being able to do that?
Right, exactly. And that's a huge problem. And that's what I talked about when we talk about, you know, designing very, very low power systems that can do one thing very well. So if we know, hey, we're going in this environment, we want to know this one thing about it. So can we design a system kind of from the bottom up, right? So we're designing the whole package to do that one thing, instead of taking sort of generalized components from here, there, and everywhere, designing it from the bottom up. So very, very low hardware level, low level code, all the way to making it a system that can do one thing very, very well. So,
Okay. So partnerships are vital to ERDC's success. How many team members and partners are part of this program, and what are their roles?
Yeah, so I mentioned we're working with folks from most of all the ERDC labs here. So in this space, probably close to 30 or 40 people that I work directly with. And with the caveat that I'm not super involved with the high performance side. So there's a bunch of folks in that department as well that are designing, you know, things that can compute systems that fit in the back of like a semi, for example. So mm-hmm. a big truck full of just computer resources. yeah, so we have folks doing everything from the actual circuit board design. So figuring out how to take a very small processor, stick it on a chip, build all the electronics around that, and then folks that can do the very low level processing that can kind of talk with that chip, interact with that chip. So we got folks that work with pulling in the sensor data, writing drivers to say, hey, this is a camera, this is what you do with that data. And then of course there's folks who are doing actual, you know, sort of science and engineering behind, okay, I have this data, what do I do with it now? What makes mm-hmm. sense, right? How do I take 6 cameras, 3 LIDARs, whatever, how do I turn that into a single coherent map or image, you know? And so kind of folks working from the ground up in this field, and then, you know, of course, packaging these devices, powering these devices, you know, hardening them against cold, heat, rain, all those things. So, mm-hmm. so like I said, it's about 40 people or so in this field right now kind of working towards this. And it's not necessarily, you know, one program. You know, we have an edge computing program.
Right.
But it's just a bunch of different projects that are all kind of working with these same kind of concepts. But yeah, so that's just kind of folks within the gates at ERDC. But we're working, of course, with folks across the USACE districts, you know, who have a lot of these challenges that we're trying to meet, that we're trying to solve. And then, you know, specifically in these problems, we're working with folks across academia as well. So we have, just to name a couple, partnerships with the University of California at San Diego, and we have University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. We've worked in the past with folks like MIT and so on and so forth. So it's a huge task to kind of build these systems. So working with folks across you know, across industry, across academia, across the rest of the core, you know, has been absolutely critical into making sure that, you know, as researchers, we can build a lot of things, we can make a lot of cool things and awesome toys, right? But until someone can say, like, hey, this is something I need, or hey, here's my challenge, can you guys help us kind of fix these things? You know, that's kind of where the rubber meets the road, right? Is like making sure that we're making things that are useful for the end users.
Well, do the students work on projects in coordination with ERDC? Is that the way it goes?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, so I guess I can talk about the work with the University of California, San Diego. You know, so we'll work over there in helping to develop the actual hardware stack, the imaging system that we put on top of the NAMBOT. So when we go into this infrastructure, we take all those images. But yeah, it's a lot of the students there working on that, graduate students. And, you know, it's a great opportunity for them. A lot of them, you know, get thesis or dissertations.
I was just going to ask, can they use that for that? So, okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, because they're really pushing sort of the technology there, we can kind of give them like, hey, here's the parameters, here's we need to design a system that can go, you know, here, run on this kind of power, you know, work this quickly, and they come up with a lot of those solutions.
So
It's really interesting, you know, when you put some students on it, you know, with the kind of the creativity that you get there, because I guess, you know, they have a lot you know, a lot more, maybe I won't say time, but, you know, just a lot of different ideas out there that we maybe wouldn't consider, right? Mm-hmm. So it's been a lot of fun to work with those sorts of groups and to interact with the folks across universities.
Plus, it makes them feel super important because they're doing something to make a difference, right?
No, yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, no, for sure. Like, you know, you're working on things that are going to be used, they're going to be impactful, you know, so... it's been tough for the students, I will say, on, you know, on the NAMBOT effort specifically. We've taken them out to the Mojave Desert in the summertime, and because we have a dam there, which is interesting. But yeah, you know, being out there in 120 degree heat and doing data collections and testing and validation and stuff. So it's not always easy, but I think it's worth it for sure.
Sounds good. What do you see for the future direction of the program?
Yeah, I think we're going to continue to sort of go, you know, so I mentioned we have the high performance side, and I think there's some really, really cool opportunities there. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the challenges we have with that is, you know, you can process a ton of data, but you still got to collect a ton of data.
Right.
When you're trying to do that out on the edge, that becomes pretty challenging, you know, to set up those kinds of networks to even collect that data and get it to that point source. It's still better than collecting that data and sending it all the way back,
right?
You know, to our HPC center here in Vicksburg or, you know, or wherever. But there's a lot of challenges with that. And then on the other side, it's actually taking some compute resources that we know we need to do, you know, like it's like mentioned, going out and building maps in the environment. So shrinking those down further, you know, let's get some chips that can fuse those cameras together maybe and things like that to cut down on our power, cut down on our actual computer resources needs by making kind of very, very specialized compute platforms. And so that's kind of the direction that we're currently headed to kind of figure out some of those opportunities and find some of those challenges.
Technology is just ever changing, though, isn't it?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, a lot of the stuff we're doing, we're taking advantage of things that are being done, you know, in private industry or, you know, with some of our academic partners, working with a few universities here too. So take advantage of what's out there. You know, I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel and figure out these things for ourselves, but take advantage of all the research that's being done out there.
Okay, well, great.
I'm Annette Kirkland. Beyond the Gates continues in a moment. You're listening to News Talk 107.7.
Next time you buy eggs at your favorite supermarket, look for the FPI symbol, which stands for foam packaging. And it also means that egg carton was made right here in Vicksburg at their plant on Highway 61. Foam packaging manufactures polystyrene foam packaging products like egg cartons, food serving trays, produce trays, and more. At Foam Packaging, our goal is to provide our customers with exceptional service, high quality products, and competitive pricing. Since 1971, customers have trusted Foam Packaging of Vicksburg. Foam Packaging, a company we can all be proud of.
Bring home the professional speed and performance of a commercial-grade lawnmower to your own yard. For nearly 40 years, Skag Power Equipment has been supplying lawn maintenance pros with the heavy-duty mowers they depend on. The Skag Freedom Z0 Turn Riding Mower lets you expertly manicure your lawn and do it in half the time of an ordinary lawn tractor. Visit Patriot Motorsports for more info and great deals on Skag mowers. Patriot Motorsports, Highway 61 North, Vicksburg.
Welcome back to Beyond the Gates. You're listening to News Talk 107.7.
Well, if you're just tuning in, I am speaking with Jordan Klon. He is a research computer engineer with the Information Technology Laboratory, otherwise known as ITL. And we're talking about computing on the edge. Okay, so as we wrap up today, what do you want listeners to remember from this valuable conversation?
Yeah, so I think the important thing to remember is that, you know, hey, this is something that's super important, you know, not just to the ERDC, but to the Army, to the DoD, and just in general, I think this is going to be, edge computing is going to become more and more prevalent. We talk about, you know, Internet of Things and so on and so forth, I think, you know, one of the most important things is that anyone can get involved with this, you know, like I said, we have mechanical engineers, we have physicists, you know, acousticians, we have chemists, we have, you know, your standard electrical computer engineers, computer scientists, folks like that, so... Mm-hmm. But, you know, the kind of the biggest challenge is actually, you know, making sure that we're connecting the dots between the people that have these problems. Like, hey, I need to be able to go sense this thing and do, you know, do these computes on it. And then connecting that with the area of expertise so that we can actually, you know, bridge that gap and come up with solutions. So,
So
I think that's just the biggest thing is that we have this capability. And so we just want to make sure that folks know that and they can come and talk with us, and we can help solve some of their problems.
That sounds great. So if you would, okay, there's a listener. Let's say there's a listener out there and that wants to know, man, how can I do what he does? I mean, you know, you talked about how you came to be where you are. What advice would you give somebody that wants to do what you do?
Yeah, no, for sure. I'll give away my age, but I graduated in 2015 here, and so... But even like towards the end of my undergraduate, there was so many new kind of technologies coming out, Raspberry Pi, Arduino, things like that, that are now so widely available. And there's such a lower barrier of entry today than there ever has been. So going out and, you know, finding devices like that, you know, Raspberry Pi has a, you know, not to advocate for them specifically, but they have some very low power systems that you can get, and a lot of code that's available online to turn on and run those things, you know. Mm-hmm. So just getting some things like that are kind of hobbyist grade and getting those and playing with those and kind of getting some background to it, you know, I think it's totally invaluable. And like I said, it's very cheap to get into that, and it's very, very easy. So you can go with very, very little experience and do that. You know, but then just finding a school that, you know, that kind of focuses on those things, those kind of emergent technologies, and going there and studying and trying to learn as much as you can.
Okay. Well, Jordan, thank you for joining us today. We learned so much about computing on the edge, and I hope you come back sometime. And we want to thank you for listening to Beyond the Gates, How Erdic Makes the Difference, and we will come back at you next time. Have a great day.
All right, thank you.
The U.S. Engineer Research Development Center, or ERDC, is the premier research development center for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Hello, I am Jared Eastman, and I would like to talk to you about how ERDC contributed in the Second World War. America's entry into World War II had a dramatic impact on the Corps of Engineers and the Waterways Experiment Station, which would later become ERDC. WES quickly changed its focus from civil works to military projects. Changing priorities, transfers, and call-ups for military service profoundly influenced the station's operations. WES personnel focused their efforts on building training facilities for the Army, harbor and channel improvements for the Navy, and revolutionized airfield construction to support the Army Air Corps. Model studies, the hallmark of WES, were made of selected landing sites in North Africa, Italy, and France. Models were also made to the benefit of Allied bombing crews, such as the V-1 and V-2 rocket launch pads and the German ball bearing works in Schweinfurt. Research that happens at WES was crucial to the success of military operations around the globe. Research that happened at WES was crucial to the success of military operations around the globe. In their drive to liberate Western Europe and invade Nazi Germany, Allied forces had to cross numerous rivers that posed formidable technical difficulties. As it was anticipated that no permanent bridges would be left standing, crossings were to be made on pontoon or pneumatic float bridges. Although American pontoons could carry heavier loads in low-velocity flows than their British counterparts, they performed poorly in heavy-velocity flows, like those that would be encountered in Europe. In their drive to liberate Western Europe and invade Nazi Germany, Allied forces had to cross numerous rivers that posed formidable technical difficulties. As it was anticipated that no permanent bridges would be left standing, crossings were to be made on pontoon or pneumatic float bridges. Although American pontoons could carry heavier loads in low-velocity flows than their British counterparts, they performed poorly in high-velocity flows, like those that would be encountered in Europe. WES personnel worked around the clock, 7 days a week, from June until November 1943, to develop and test various designs that would reduce skin friction between the pontoons and water and prevent overtopping of the bow or sides. On the night of March 23, 1945, companies from the 17th Armored Engineer Battalion utilized the new design to construct treadway rafts to prepare the crossing of the Rhine River south of Wesel. Bridge construction started at 9:45 in the morning, and by 4 p.m., the first truck crossed into Germany. The bridge, comprised of over 1,152 feet of M2 treadway and 93 pneumatic floats, was completed in just 6 hours and 15 minutes. Air power was a decisive factor in Allied victory in World War II, both in Europe and in the Pacific. Yet, as late as 1939, most runways, taxiways, and aprons were either sod fields or rigid pavement that could not withstand the anticipated traffic levels and stresses produced by heavy military airplanes being developed. To address this crisis in airfield design, engineers and scientists looked to asphalt-based surfaces to accommodate heavy bombers of the time, such as the B-32 Dominator and the B-17 Flying Fortress, some of which could weigh in excess of 120,000 pounds. WES quickly emerged as a world leader in flexible pavement research, as well as the development of expedient surfaces such as landing mats for rapid construction of temporary or emergency airfields in combat zones. The revolutionary developments in airfield design produced at WES were key to gaining air superiority and would become the standard for commercial airfields. To learn more about how ERDC discovers, develops, and delivers innovative solutions to the nation's toughest challenges today, be sure to listen to Beyond the Gates on News Talk FM 107.7. Thursdays at 8:15 a.m. and 9:10 a.m. Or check out our past shows on VicksburgRadio.com. We discuss exciting research with representatives from one of the 7 Erdic labs, and they explain how their projects are important to the community, the region, and the nation. Again, I am Jared Eastman, Erdic Public Affairs, and thanks for listening.